Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, April 3rd, 2017. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Governor Otter won't say if he'll veto grocery sales tax repeal passed by the legislature. He speaks on teachers' pay, career ladder, and other topics at the press conference at the governor's office at the Capitol. Also, part of Governor Otter's request for federal disaster area designation on a flooding for southern Idaho denied. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson sues Tim Iman. Washington House passes its version of the state budget, and a committee in the Washington legislature votes to increase the smoking age to 21. And we'll also have excerpts from last week's debate on breaching the Lower Snake River dams held at Washington State University. That's all coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter did not say during a lengthy press conference this afternoon whether or not he will sign the repeal of the 6% sales tax on groceries passed by the legislature this week. Speaking in his office at the state capitol, Otter told reporters he will work his way through the stacks of bills that he has on his desk right now.
That I have yet to sign. I don't know how many bills. There's several stacks of bills in there yet to be treated. And if you're going to ask questions about how I'm going to sign certain bills, I'm going to tell you you'll find out when I sign them or when I don't sign them. But I just need you to know that have in mind that there are a lot of other things that I have to consider relative to the general fund budget.
Otter also said he would not likely call a special session to get another tax cut passed. That would be the reduction of the unemployment insurance tax rate for business owners, which failed due to last-minute squabbling before the legislature adjourned for the year last Wednesday. Overall, Governor Otter said he rated the 2017 session a good one.
If I go back to the old days of grading in school on papers, anything between 92% and 100 was an A and on down from there. And I would say, at least from reviewing the state of the state in the sum, we got right to around 92-93%. So I would once again give the legislature an A, an incomplete on some other things. But, you know, we started the session by, in my state of the state, encouraging the legislature to keep our commitments that we made during the recession when we were making cuts on replacing and reestablishing a funded program for education in the state of Idaho, K through career. And if you look for the most part at this session, that's exactly what they did. Now, there were a few things that were left undone on the budget. Other issues, I'll let you bring those up. But those are things that I would say I would give an incomplete on.
Idaho Governor Butch Otter. Otter also informed reporters the federal government has denied his request for federal disaster designation for additional counties, mostly in southern Idaho, due to recent flooding.
They responded negatively to my additional request for a federal declaration. And the official declaration did not include all 32 counties. It did include what we knew up to that time. And I think that initial request, when did that go in, Shawnee? It went in a month ago. Right after we had experienced the disasters over in Washington and Payette County, and then the Magic Valley got hit really hard. And so we were trying to have a running total. And maybe I was a little premature on my request. But if that's the case, hopefully we can render that problem with our appeal.
So this isn't a definitive answer from Washington,
D.C.? It was a definitive answer. The letter said no. But there is a process for appeal. And so we are putting together our appeal request right now and adding those additional counties. We do know this. We do know that it's going to cost the agricultural sector in those counties that I named earlier, primarily over in the Weezer drainage, over in Washington and Payette drainage, Weezer and Payette drainage, and in the Magic Valley, of about $100 million.
Governor Otter said he's keeping an eye on more potential flooding in southern Idaho coming as warm weather arrives and more mountain snow begins to melt. Otter also answered a question about what Idaho should do for the 78,000 people who fall into the health coverage gap, meaning they make too much to be eligible for Medicaid but too little to be eligible for health coverage under the Federal Affordable Care Act, which is still in effect.
Several times, in several different efforts, we've tried to cover the gap rather than just by expanding Medicaid. And the PCAP, which we thought was probably, it was going to find a favorable landing in the legislature, just didn't quite get there last year. I cautioned them this year, if you'll remember, to be careful about what they do because of the fact that we didn't know what was going to happen, and we still don't know what was going to happen to Obamacare in the final. Their first effort failed, but I've gotten every signal from Tom Price to the President of the United States and to the leaders of both the Senate and the House that issue's not over with, that they're going to continue to work on it. And if they come up with something that satisfies all of that, then we'll see where we fit in that.
So you think that we should continue to wait and see, and is there any point at which you would not want to continue to wait and see?
Well, I can only do what I can do. And I made a commitment to the legislature right after the Supreme Court made their decision, which was back in 2010 or 11. Whenever the Supreme Court made their decision, I had a meeting with the legislative leadership, and at their request, I said I would not make a unilateral decision. I would neither, by executive order, create a legislative exchange. I was going to work with the legislature to do that. We did that. Nor would I unilaterally expand Medicaid. And I think that's a promise, and I don't feel like I've been given license because I think they've tried to work on it. They've tried to come up with some ideas that would make it work. But that doesn't give me license to go ahead on my own.
Idaho Governor Butch Otter speaking today in Boise. One reporter asked Governor Otter about some money that was not approved by the legislature this year to pay for an accountability system for teachers as the state implements its five-year career ladder plan for teacher raises.
I think the accountability piece we owe to the people of Idaho, and I believe the legislature believes that. How we get there, probably, maybe we don't have total, well, obviously we don't have total agreement on that right now. But I still think that's one that ought to be a priority for us, is to, we've got the career ladder in place. We're now 3 years in funding the career ladder. This year was the big year. Next year is a little more modest, but it's still a continuing promise and a commitment that we've made, and I hope that we will keep that. I'm going to ask that we keep that. But all of those commitments were made on the basis of accountability. And it's the accountability piece that we still find ourselves short with, and we're going to work during the interim to see what we can do to render that, make that commitment on accountability.
That was Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter giving his end-of-session press conference after the legislature adjourned last week. The press conference was delayed by 5 days because Governor Otter had laryngitis last week. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Democratic-controlled Washington House passed a $44.9 billion two-year budget Friday, which differs greatly from the budget passed by the Republican coalition in charge of the Senate a week before. Legislative Republicans were quick to criticize the House budget for proposing to spend more money than the state is expected to take in revenue during the next biennium. House Democrats will propose a package of tax increases, which was scheduled to be discussed in hearings at the state capitol today. The House budget passed on a 50-48 party line vote. Republican Representative Mike Volz of Spokane said, "In the real Washington, what people do is figure out how much money they have and prioritize their spending, knowing they can't get everything they want." The Senate's $43.4 billion budget included different funding priorities and does not include increasing taxes. Its most controversial provisions change property tax laws and shifts K-12 school spending more heavily towards wealthier communities such as Seattle and Bellevue in order to subsidize basic education throughout the rest of the state. Most of the communities that would pay higher property taxes are in the central Puget Sound area. House and Senate leadership will now embark in negotiating sessions, which presumably will result in a compromise proposal for both the House and Senate to vote on. The Washington House Finance Committee Friday approved a bill that would allow local governments to increase property taxes by larger amounts without putting the increases before voters. Currently, cities and counties in Washington can only increase property taxes by up to 1% per year unless a 66.7% supermajority approves them. The Finance Committee voted 6-5 along party lines to send the bill to the full House, with all committee Democrats voting in favor. Under the bill, a formula that takes into account population growth and inflation would determine the limit in tax increases without supermajority approval of voters. The formula would max out at 5%. Voters statewide approved the 1% per year maximum property tax increase in 2001. The state Supreme Court overturned it in 2007, but the legislature held a special session to reinstitute it with language deemed constitutional. Democratic Representative Larry Springer of Kirkland said, "Since that action 10 years ago, lawmakers have taken away some sales tax revenue from cities and counties, including some of the revenue they've received from liquor sales and, more recently, cannabis sales." Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed a $2.1 million lawsuit against anti-tax initiative activist Tim Iman Friday, saying Iman spent money raised for initiative campaigns on himself. Ferguson also accused Iman of spending money raised for specific initiatives on other initiative campaigns in violation of campaign finance laws. In his lawsuit, Ferguson asked Iman to return $308,000 to donors that had been raised for anti-tax initiative campaigns. Ferguson said in a news conference, Iman had developed a, quote, elaborate web of unlawful financial transactions. Also named in the lawsuit is Iman's for-profit company Citizen Solutions and another company, Watchdog for Taxpayers. Ferguson said, "These defendants demonstrate contempt for our campaign finance laws, and they will be held accountable." According to the Seattle Times, Iman's attorney, Mark Lamb, said his client did nothing wrong. Lamb said in an email, "The money he received was lawfully earned for the services he provided. For all of the heated rhetoric earlier today, this dispute is simple, whether two transactions needed to be included on campaign reports. The Attorney General believes they should. We do not." The Washington House Finance Committee voted 8-3 last week to increase the smoking and vaping age in the state to 21. According to the spokesman review, Democratic Representative Jerry Pollitt of Seattle said the bill is about saving lives and science, adding that those who become addicted to nicotine before the age of 21 find it, quote, nearly impossible to quit, unquote. Pollitt said studies show the part of the brain that resists nicotine addiction is not developed in teenagers. The bill also levies the same 95% tax on vaping products that currently applies to cigarettes. That tax would not apply to special cartridges designed to help people stop smoking, nor on cannabis vaping products, which are already heavily taxed. Republican committee member Ed Orcutt of Kamala said he opposes the bill because it will hurt stores that sell tobacco products while not really cutting down on smoking. Orcutt's reasoning is those between 18 and 21 will get older friends to purchase their cigarettes for them or drive across state lines to purchase them. During last week's Washington State University debate on breaching the four lower Snake River dams to save endangered and threatened salmon runs, retired U.S. Representative Doc Hastings of Central Washington said the federal judges in Portland that have insisted on salmon survival plan rewrites have gotten their facts wrong.
What is driving their decision is based on the Endangered Species Act. The Endangered Species Act was put in place to recover species. That's what it was put in place for. And records on the Columbia River systems started in 1938. We are now seeing fish runs coming back up the Columbia and the Snake River that are exceeding or close to what they were in 1938. In other words, the fish runs are coming back strong. So what the judges are getting wrong is why are they saying that these dams are an impediment when the law says you're supposed to recover fish, and the judge is really contrary. I can tell you, for chair of the House Natural Resources Committee, Judge Redden was on the bench. I was very, very critical of him. I called him an activist judge. After he retired, he proved my point by saying publicly, I think the dams ought to be removed. I'm fearful that Judge Simon is coming from the same way. And I'll just cite the latest decision that came down yesterday or today, where he said that they have to go back and look at this data again. But he says you'll start in 2018. Now, just think about it. If a judge is supposed to interpret the law, and all of a sudden the judge says, because there may be a lot of problems, we won't start in 2018. That sounds to me like legislating from the bench.
That was retired Republican U.S. Representative Doc Hastings, who until recently represented Central Washington in Congress. Sam Mace of the group Save Our Wild Salmon told the audience at last Tuesday's debate, Hastings is considering hatchery fish when he shouldn't be.
A hatchery fish does not mean a wild fish, and that's the crux of the debate. Hatchery fish are there for fishermen to catch. They are not a replacement for wild fish that are important both to the rivers and just the fact that under the Endangered Species Act, they are the ones we need to protect. And I think even the fishermen that respond and depend on the hatchery fish would agree to the importance of maintaining and restoring our wild runs. I would also say that is not true that the judge has said wait until 2018 to start coming up with this plan. We've already had a public scoping process where the initial public comment has happened, and now the process is beginning already.
That was Save Our Wild Salmon Outreach Director Sam Mace. Idaho Rivers United Executive Director Kevin Lewis was on the panel after another panelist, Center for Environment Director Todd Myers, said the four lower Snake River dams produce $200 million worth of electricity per year. Lewis took issue with that number.
Even if it is $200 million a year, when it costs more to maintain the dams themselves than what they produce in power, what's the point? I mean, if you're a private business person, like I used to be, you know, my revenues had to exceed my expenses or I was out of business. But if you're the federal government, it appears that you can run projects like these dams where it doesn't matter what your revenues are because the taxpayers cover the bill, and that's what's taking place here. The power generated by the Lower Snake River dams, and I'll go back a little bit to an earlier statement you made about how these dams are basically a battery. That only applies if you have storage. The Lower Snake River dams are run-of-river projects. They generate with the water that comes down the system naturally. They do not have the ability to store water and wait till the middle of the day to generate extra power, or vice versa. So the dams themselves do not generate substantial amounts of power when we need power. In the cold of winter, in the heat of summer, these dams produce a minimal amount of power, and it's very high-cost power.
That was Idaho Rivers United Executive Director Kevin Lewis speaking at a debate on dam breaching at Washington State University last week. The Moscow City Council is expected to vote tonight on the purchase of a more than $500,000 fire engine. The proposed purchase would take place through the Houston-Galveston Area Council Purchasing Consortium, which would reduce the price by about $18,000 down to $515,000. The city council will also be asked to accept the low $1.15 million bid from Titan Technologies of Boise to build a 1,400-foot-long underground sanitary sewer trunk line directly upstream from the city's wastewater treatment plant. The 36-inch pipe would run from the southeastern corner of Gormley Park to the north side of College Street, where it will connect to a 30-inch sewer main near the Kreitz Seed property. The project will include another 1,400 feet of sanitary sewer, stormwater, and water lines, and full reconstruction of the segment of 6th Street between Taco Time and the Paradise Creek Bridge. The council will also be asked to set the public hearing on the fiscal year 2018 budget for Monday, August 14th. The council tonight will also hear a report on the most recent citizen survey from Assistant City Supervisor Jen Piffner, and will hear the annual report from the Moscow Volunteer Fire Department from Fire Chief Brian Nickerson. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather for the Moscow Pullman area, mostly clear tonight and tomorrow, low 24, high 52, a chance of sprinkles and mostly cloudy Tuesday night, low 38, mostly cloudy, high near 60 on Wednesday, 30% chance of showers Wednesday night, cloudy, low 44, and 80% chance of showers Thursday, high 59. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, 42 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at 6:30. Our weekly talk show, What's Left, will be on the air 7:30 to 9 tonight, and then music begins around 9 o'clock with the early morning Enigma. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to pick up tickets for the Real Radio Dinner, which will be held this Saturday, 6 p.m. at the 1912 Center in Moscow. Tonight is the last time to buy tickets. You can buy them on the KRFP website. If you hurry in the next hour or two, krfp.org. Also available at Glasphemy in Pullman. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Have a good night.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.